Welcome to the It Feels Right podcast. You know what feels right, Adam, is your absolute warrior-like dedication to this podcast and what you accomplished this morning. It's nothing short of remarkable. What are we going to cover today?
Well, I did make a quick trip from the beach to make sure that we record after I left my equipment at home. And we will be talking a bit about that. We'll be talking about MLP, and we will be talking about a handful of specific player types that you can exploit with some of your speed ups and your attacks. You're not going to want to miss this.
Let's get it.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
This is the moment we waited for. Everything you want is right here. We gonna give them what they came for. We gonna take it up from last year. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Yeah.
Questions of some viewer questions we can go over today, Adam. How about that?
I mean, okay, not now, good. But
maybe we'll go over those a little later.
Did you mistime your first comment, or was the countdown perfect and you just said what you needed to say right there?
I don't know. It's a good question. I wasn't even looking at the countdown because I was on a different screen trying to get the little notes that I had. But did it time perfectly?
Almost perfectly.
Almost perfectly. Okay.
Almost perfectly.
Well, I tried.
We'll take it. We'll take it. So. Viewer questions.
Just a couple. Yeah, I'm gonna throw a bunch of chat over here.
Yeah,
we'll wait. We'll save those for a little later. You know,
Rob, why don't we just start off then with me tooting my own horn about my dedication to you,
to the craft,
the It Feels Right podcast, and to our viewers. As I was I'm in a lovely week long vacation at Topsail Beach in North Carolina, and being the idiot that I am, I forgot to bring my recording equipment with me, and I made the 2.5-hour trip here this morning just to make sure we put out this content on time.
But are you going back?
Oh yeah, I'm going back today.
Today? Oh, Adam, that is actually
5-hour round trip there, fella.
That's respect. I thought you just like left vacation and like you're back. You decided to drive earlier than you were gonna check out, but now you just came for the pod. You drove home for the pod.
I came for the pod. Let's be clear. It was my own fault that I wasn't able to record in my lovely tropical surroundings at the beach. But
yeah,
I have been known to be an airhead, and I probably will continue to be one. So here we are.
But that is impressive. Well played.
Yeah, I'm impressed with myself. Yes.
Did you watch much MLP?
Yeah, no, I did. It was on, but it's a much different situation than it used to be with a small child. So usually have it muted because the talking distracts him, and you know, I'll watch 10 minutes and then I'll have to go do something for 30 minutes, and you know, I also don't see that changing anytime soon. So that will be my new PPA, whatever tour you want to talk about viewing experience moving forward. But that's all right, because he's cute as and
indeed he is. Maybe I was going to say, I mean, we're not going to get an appearance today, obviously, because I'm assuming you didn't bring AJ back solo with you.
Not here. Yes, he is not here. Yeah, solo, me and the kid for a day is
just right here, just hanging out of the pod.
Yeah, it's a death. Maybe one day, but today or tomorrow, neither one of those days apply at all. So, Rob, why don't we just maybe we should make this a segment as we continue to move forward with IFR, but maybe the segment should just be deep in the Twitter streets with Rob Nunnery, because I've been scrolling through and you've been active. I've even thrown out a few comments, and you know, the hardcores, the hey shays and whatnots, they like to get in those Twitter streets and let it fly on pickleball topics.
Hey, the streets are dangerous out there. You gotta be careful. Be careful of what you say. I haven't been, I've just been saying whatever I want to say, but, you know, that's because I can't say what I want to say on the podcast. We've gone over this.
I was wondering where you were going with that, saying that you need to be careful in the Twitter streets because that is not your MO.
I have not been careful. No, I have not been careful.
No, 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 no. Nor would I expect you to be. Why don't we just start off talking about Greg Dow?
Yeah, I mean big. That's my. Yeah, he was in the commentary booth with Cam Irwin, I believe, most of the time, and I would say they're getting their value out of Greg. I don't know if they're sending him out to camps in Idaho or Montana as well, but they're getting good use out of Greg in the commentary booth. He actually has great insight. He plays against everybody. He understands like what's going on out there. He says some super off the wall, but to be expected, it's Greg Dow, and that's what makes him special.
Yeah, I mean, absolute champion until he gets canceled, right? I believe that was your comment.
Yeah. I mean,
And I made one, too. And actually, in my comment, I used the word ignorance. But that has – it was a pro-Greg Dow tweet. I just wanted to clear that up, as I believe he said jumping sharks of some sort. Sharks don't jump, they breach.
Okay. Okay.
And something about a pretty lemur,
just like referring to what they look like.
Yes, exactly. So that was the only tweet that I saw about it. And then that is all lemurs. Maybe they're so ugly they are cute, but I don't think I could probably call them cute. But so you have that ignorance there from Greg Dow, but paired together with his delivery, it becomes brilliance.
And then
so
his little
that's what I was getting at. I wanted to let everyone know that.
No, and then his little like that's little cackle after he says something that he finds himself like what he said funny.
and I probably only listened to maybe 30 minutes total of him in the booth.
Yeah.
But he is a big fan of talking in the third person, and I do not hate that.
Oh, it's always good when somebody's talking third person.
Greg, he likes to talk about Greg and Dow. And
yes.
not it doesn't have to be Greg Dow together. It could be Greg this time and then Dow next time. So I'm all for it. I like a little shake up in the booth. I think him and Rob Cassidy have that what are they going to say next vibe about them. And you know what? All good.
What I also like, I mean, there's a couple of things, but like I like the fact that he's like it's not all like fluffy and positive, like, oh my god, that's so amazing. It's like he's calling out what's good, what's bad, which I think is important. You got to say like, oh, that was just I can't remember some specific examples, but there are many times where he was just like, yeah, that's you can't do that, that's just not very good.
Where are you calling me out? Do you think I should be meaner on the broadcast?
Not mean. I would just say more like everything's not doesn't have to be great, but I think
that's fair.
Yeah, but I also think you call out things that are not ideal, like if somebody does something dumb. But I think you could be like a little less positive about it, because sometimes people do dumb stuff, and that's okay.
No, it's true. I definitely think that's the case. And, you know, still been doing it for a while now and still working on that perfect balance. Not sure I found it yet, but, you know, maybe
it's not an easy job.
San Clemente PPA. Maybe I just light into people. Just
when is that?
Very end of the month. I think it's like
okay.
29th through the 1st or 2nd, something along those dates. And yeah, so I think I might just be angry.
Didn't Josh,
at him and
did Josh say
fly.
He was going out there then? Josh, hop in the broadcast.
Get in here, Josh. Come on.
But we need you being recorded too, Josh. We need you being recorded. Josh is not going. Okay.
Oh.
Breaking news. You can go in the arch in St. Louis, and Josh is not going to Southern California.
I was going to say something about the arch too. So that was
Mullen was just like, was how did you not know you could go in the arch? Like, I don't – it doesn't look like you could go in it, just like from the pictures I've seen. But
I've been in it twice, and I didn't know you could go up in it. So, yeah. I mean, you're convincing, Rob. I mean, you're convincing. You had me convinced.
There are a lot of comments about that. Like, yeah, of course you can go in the yard. Like, I got a lot of messages on that one.
Oh yeah. Also, Greg Duff threw out the big butt comment on Jack Sock.
Oh, dude. I mean, not just hilarious. a comment. He just couldn't stop talking about it. I mean,
partner distraction. Whatever else.
Man, to be fair, that thing's large. That thing is. I mean, he's that thing sits up high. It's he carries it well. He does.
I remember I've heard like the NFL coaches like at the combine, and they're not interested in drafting an offensive or defensive lineman unless they have an absolutely huge. So it's a compliment. It's athletic. If you have just a massive ass, you're probably a pretty good mover and a pretty good athlete. So
imagine him boxing out in basketball. Nobody's getting in front of him.
No chance. I mean, you can't. You literally can't. So
another. So my favorite line by Greg Dow this week was he just casually mentioned something. He's like, yeah, I was once in a mall and I was holding a man's hand that I thought was my dad, but for like an hour, but it was a stranger.
Oh God. An hour. the story is reasonable. I think it's probably happened to quite a few kids, but for an hour, Greg?
Like he's just walking around with a random man for an hour, just holding his hand.
Wow. Yeah. That's I didn't hear that one. And that's a little disturbing, I would have to say.
But that's what we get with Greg Dow on the mic. So, So props to MLP for using Greg the best way that they know how.
Last thing on the Twitter streets is I wanted to mention a little bit of the Ben versus Tyra bench mic situation. I've been waiting for this one for a while because I don't know what it's been, maybe 5 tournaments or so that they've been using bench mics, and I've just been waiting for something absolutely horrible to happen because I used to say some very aggressive things to my partner and to myself. I don't think anything was malicious on my part, but it could be construed that way. So basically, Ben and Anna Lee are having a little conversation about drives on the court mic. I think the verbiage was pretty mild overall, but this poses the question, now that that's an established thing, like, do the players have to be fully responsible for what they say and need to know what's that the mics are there on the bench and that what they say absolutely is basically like saying it to the public?
Anna Lee knew the mic was there. She pointed it out and she was the grown up in the situation being like, yep. Yep. But I think there's going to be mics on the benches. You know, there's mics all over the place. And what you say you're in a public place with mics participating in a sport. Yeah. You're responsible for what you say when mics are around. You're on court. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And my initial statement was just about the word said. And then after I read a couple comments, it made me think a little bit more about it, that Tyra was brought into the conversation. She wasn't even playing the match. I didn't know that. And also the fact that there are bench mics, and everybody knows that at this point, at least from spectators and players know that. So I just wanted to bring that up, as that definitely got some run with
This is good. Yeah. Seriously. That's why we have mics on the bench. That's like, just say what you're going to say. It's all good. And honestly, Tyra does hit a different kind of forehand. It's not a tennis stroke low to high. It's more of like a flat kind of side spin. It's just different. But it's effective. I mean, she's beaten Anna Lee in singles. Going into MLP, she lit up Carolina. So, I mean, yeah, it's different technique, different form than traditional tennis forehand, but it's effective. And, I think Tyra
HTB, number six on the premier player rankings, going 5-5-3, winning 53% of her points. So well done, Tyra. You drive it however the you want to, Tyra. If you're going to be number six on the player ratings for an MLP, let's go.
100%. One more thing on the Twitter, because we talked about this back and forth a little bit, but in terms of player standings, why would, and tell me what your thoughts on this, but I think wins win loss record percentage is more indicative of your performance over point percentage one? Why would we look at point percentage one first over wins losses?
Well, I mean, I think if you're using the phrase indicative of performance, then I disagree. Obviously, given the format, winning matches is the most important. So I think being listed by match win percentage, whether it's for a team or for a player, is completely fine. And that's probably what it should be. But overall, in terms of points won and points lost, it's a much larger sample size than just one individual match that you're playing. So, of course, winning the match, playing big in the big moments, all that stuff is very important. It's the most important thing. But I think when you start getting up into the 300, 400, 500, 600 total points played for a team or for a player, then that actually shows more of well you played overall given an entire event or multiple events or over an entire year. Because of each match individually is such a small sample size.
So you're saying if a player over the course of call it a season has won 48% of their points and is call it 500 versus a player that's won like 47% of their points, but is at 60, like has won 65% of their matches, you think the 48% is better than the 47% that has a better winning record?
I would say yes.
Wow.
So I mean, there's a lot of like studies on like the clutch gene and how it's not real, and you know, a lot of people think that that's hogwash.
But nothing else matters in sports other than wins and losses. I mean, nothing else matters, but winning is the most important. Period. But then, obviously, like you said, I think you have to place more weight on winning versus overall points, because if you're down, call it whatever, like you maybe you get blown out some matches, but I don't think, but you still win, you know, you're still winning the other matches. I think just win loss has to matter more.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that goes by the wayside, and we're just talking about total points. You play 1,000 points. This person wins 580. This person wins 540. The 580 person played better, in my opinion. And I know people get tight, and I know the match wins are important, but I'm just sticking to the numbers of it and the overall large body of work. And I'm going to say the point one percentage is more important in the long run.
But even in like certain matches, you can call it for tennis. You can, and even pickle, you can have somebody that won, like somebody else won the most points, but I still won the match. So, but you would say that they're the, like, so in that case, obviously they won. It doesn't matter that the other person won more points.
Yeah,
so,
but if you can bottle up that level and play 100 matches, the person who wins the more points is going to win more of the 100 matches than the other person. It just kind of worked out in that sliver of time. That's how I see it. Maybe that's just completely flawed logic, but that's how I see it.
I think this is a good conversation. I think it's fair. I think, yeah, on some level, over that, like a huge sample size like that, obviously, you know, points, you get a larger sample size than games. And I think, yeah, it's a fair argument.
Say for example, they talk about the clutch gene and like Michael Jordan, whatever else, but like you can't even compare like game-winning shots versus game-winning misses, because even that is a small sample.
Yeah.
So it's like, sure, he's made 15 game winners and he's only missed 10, and someone else has worse ratios. It's all such a small sample, and you can't just replicate those moments 1,000 times and figure out who's better at it. It just kind of worked out in that instance that he was better or worse. And so I'm all about the long term and the long run when it comes to numbers and stats and things of that nature. And I think that that's actually where you can gain a large edge in a variety of different things, is just throwing the short term to the side and let someone else really make a big decision or do something with that short term information, and you play the long game.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think winning, losing matters more, but I get the argument, and it's fair.
Right. Very good. I'm I think I might just start being an Rob. I'm gonna be bad.
I like it. No, this is.
I'm gonna go on the mic.
But this is the point of a podcast is to have conversations like this. No good cop, bad cop.
I'm too soft. I gotta excuse my French.
I gotta
harden up a little bit here, Rob. Okay, because you make a bad decision. In San Clemente, and you're on my court, I'm going to let you have it for it, okay?
I like it. Watch out, everybody.
We'll see how this lasts. We'll see how long this lasts. But okay, so let's take a little look-see here. Here's a perfect example, Rob. Here we got a perfect example. New York Hustlers had a phenomenal weekend in D.C. They went 6-0, three wins in regulations and three Dream Breaker wins. They won 614 points and they lost 600. So it was a 14 point total difference and they went 6-0. And that's pretty wild to me right there that they were able to do that. I mean, kudos to the New York Hustlers. 6-0 is 6-0. No one's going to take that away from them. They won 14 more points than they lost throughout the entirety of the tournament.
That's why win-loss matters. Over points.
Hey, moving on. All right, moving on. Okay, so just a little light recap here. We had the Dallas Flash, pretty quality. Three wins in regulation, one loss in regulation. No Dream Breakers for the Dallas Flash. DC Pickleball Team had an we'll say the DC Pickleball Team and the Texas Ranchers had an okay weekend. The Texas Ranchers filled Quang Duong in for Christian Alshon, who's having some form of physical ailment. So both of those teams.
Do we not know actually, what's wrong or what?
No, I don't have any intel on what's wrong. I just know he's out for this tournament and hoping to be back for San Clemente at the end of the month.
Okay.
So no idea. But anyway, both of those teams, DC and Texas, they went one regular season win, one regular season loss. One Dream Breaker win, two Dream Breaker losses. I know that's a little bit complicated. And then you had the bottom dwellers of the Carolina Pickleball Club, previously the Seattle Pioneers. They had a rough go of it. One regular loss, one Dream Breaker win, and three Dream Breaker losses for that squad.
Well, they're not built for singles, I'll tell you that.
No, they're not. And the Utah Black Diamonds, the only team to not use all of their draft points, dollars, whatever you want to call it, in the draft, they went 0-4, and all four losses were in regulation. So that is a tough go of it for them. But let's touch on the Carolina Pickleball Club, because there was a lot of talk about not great camaraderie, not great support between those four players of Colin and Ben Johns, Jesse Irvin, and Andrea Coop. So what do you think? Like, here's a different example of a MLP player who plays with the energy and a good teammate, say Rafa Hewitt, who has maybe had more MLP success than standard tournament success. And then you have a team like the Carolina Pickleball Club, who did not play well this past weekend and did not seem to have that energy that seems to carry a lot of teams in Major League Pickleball.
Yeah, it matters a lot, obviously. I think I wouldn't say you have the most positive team in Carolina. I think, even watching, I just felt bad for Coop. She was, there wasn't a whole lot of support for her. And it's like, okay, well, if you're pissed at, and she didn't have great results over the weekend, but she was a good teammate. She was cheering when she wasn't playing. Didn't seem like anybody else was. You picked her, right? You picked her. So lift her up. I mean, it's, and it's tough. It's like, if just somebody has bad energy, it's easy to leak into, and this isn't just Carolina, it's any team. It's like, if one person has pretty bad energy, it really leaks quickly into the others. And you have to have a leader on the team that's going to be positive and lift everybody up. And it's, on paper, they should have obviously done much better. That what standing are they, like, close to last, right?
Yeah, close to last. Let me look it up real fast. So, and it's different because teams play different amounts of matches, And yeah. not every team plays every event. So, like, total points aren't quite the way to go yet because there's some big discrepancies. But, yeah, like I said, there are 3 Dream Breaker losses, 1 Dream Breaker win, and 1 regular loss. So they played 5 matches, and they only got 5 points, which is certainly not great. And, you know, that's how it goes sometimes. So, I mean, some of these point differentials and a lot of the overall points for players and teams are extremely tight.
Yeah.
For these MLP events, like you could be crushing people and you're only winning 51-52% of your points. So everything's very tight. It only takes a couple here and there to change outcomes.
Yeah, margins. I mean, that's the thing with MLP. Margins are always so slim and small, especially when you have to win on your serve now. So it's tough out there. And you see that. I mean, even in Challenger, right? You mentioned Rafa Hewitt. I'm not sure where he's at in the player standings, but I don't think he had the best of weekends. But he's a good. But even that, like, right? Like he was in Premier, you know, last season, and Challenger now, and it's just because. And some could argue that he could be in Premier now, but it's how I felt in Challenger too. It's you feel like you don't have that much control over the result. It's kind of tough. So, I haven't looked at the player standings in Challenger. Do you have that pulled up or no?
I do, Robert. I do.
Yeah, you do.
So, tell you what, I love the current squad of the Hard Eights. We didn't have our best first tournament, but apparently I should have just drafted Todd Foat and Eva Radzikowska again because they're crushing it. Yep. Todd Foat 8-0, Jaume 7-1, Eva 4-2 with a nice differential. Let's find Rafa Hewitt. Yeah, he was 22nd. He went 5-9 for the California Black Bears. And granted, he did not have his partner he was supposed to have in DJ Young, who has a recurring wrist issue. So Spencer Smith filled in. That's tough. 5-9, 48% of the points. So, it seemed like there was some cellar dweller teams in Premier and then a couple teams that were almost flawless. And then Challenger was a big jumble. You know, one team beat one team, another team beat that team, but lost to another team. So it was a lot tighter, a little bit more parity in the Challenger division than there was in Premier.
Tough go of it for the Slice, huh?
Yeah, the Slice. Let's look at the team standings here. Yeah, the Chicago Slice. So they actually only played 3 matches. That's what's kind of wild is. So the bottom 2 teams in the Challenger standings are the Black Bears and the Slice for this particular tournament. And the Black Bears played 7 and the Slice only played 3 matches. So the Slice had a loss in regulation and 2 Dream Breaker losses, which I believe is Brendan Long and Jack Monroe. And I'm not sure I remember.
And then it's Allison Harris and Kelsey Grambo. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was an action packed week and I liked the bit that I saw. I thought maybe there was a few more fans there than there was for Atlanta. I'm not positive on the number, but I heard. Not confirmed through the grapevine that something like in Atlanta, there was like 4x the ticket sales for the PPA than there was for MLP.
Interesting.
And not confirmed, but that was a little buzz of a conversation that I heard happening. And those being back-to-back weekends, I thought that was pretty interesting too. So hopefully those DC numbers picked up as we always talk about that long layoff for MLP and they're going to have to regain the traction.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like it didn't look good. I think it was on the first day, like stands were pretty empty, but on the, like over the weekend stands look full, which is also good because I don't know if they sold tickets or they gave tickets away for free, but the DC, I know the DC amateur event didn't pull many numbers. I think they had like 25 to 40 people sign up or something like that, like very, very low. So most of those people in the stands are people that came to purely watch,
right.
which is a good sign, I think, in terms of viewership in person. And I think viewership in person, obviously, like watching it live is very fun, especially with the energy on court. So you don't really get that necessarily on watching on stream. They had to halt some matches in the evening because there were no lights at them.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, here we go. Here we go.
No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. People already know that I think, you know, pickleball should be indoors. I don't need to keep saying it, but there, I have yet to see an indoor facility that doesn't have lights. I'll just say that and I'll leave that there. But dude, to play a 2-2 match and then to have to come back and play the Dream Breaker, only the Dream Breaker to finish the match the next day is, oh, that's not super fun. It's like you lose all the moment, like the team that tied it up at 2-2, right? Like you have the momentum going into the Dream Breaker and then it halts and then you have to regroup and play the next day. It's a bit of a bummer.
And to regroup and play the next day singles 4 points at a time.
Right.
Like that, like, you know, there's no rhythm. There's no flow.
No,
you don't get a first round singles match, or you don't whatever, get down 5-0 in your first round match and then steamroll the guy. Like,
yeah,
you every point counts right from the beginning in that situation. So that's very tough for the players, mentally and physically, really. Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Any other thoughts on MLP? I mean, we could talk about it for 4 hours, but
I mean, overall thoughts, just looking at the challenger here. I mean, you got the hard eights in eighth place, Adam. Hope you guys are going to come up with a plan to dig out of that.
We need to a little more comfortable with the squad, having all that, some film work to do. So I think we can dig out of it, but you said that we do have plenty of work to do.
But also you got some time. Thoughts on the Florida Smash? You had Rettmeyer. Who fill in for Pat Smith?
That's a phenomenal question. I knew at one point. I know Martina Frantova,
yep,
and Tammy Emmerich,
yep,
are the other two, and then Rettmeyer. Gosh, why am I blanking on this?
I'm blanking on it too. I don't.
I must find it. Florida Smash. Yates Johnson.
Yep, that makes sense.
So from a team perspective for the Florida Smash, they didn't have the best event in Atlanta. And this time they had one regular season win, one regular season loss, and two Dream Breaker losses. So also not the best run of it here. So back-to-back below average tournaments for the Florida Smash.
Adam, I don't know if you know this, but I haven't checked a bag since probably 2005. So I'm going on 20 years of no check bags. I only carry on. And what's made that really easy for me over the past couple years are Selkirk backpacks. Because little do people know, you get a personal item and a carry-on on most carriers. And even though both items are big backpacks, I carry them on. I fill both of them to the brim. And they both count as carry-on. So I don't have to check a bag. It's important.
No, I'm right there with you. And, that's the big boy. And I am past my playing days. So I do one big boy and one little smaller fella here that I can take with me from the hotel to the venue every single day. Leave the big boy there. Don't check bags. Get yourself some Selkirk gear. Small, medium, big, you need it.
I don't have the small. I need the small. Somebody send me the small. But yeah, you're right, because I could put my little laptop and I don't have to take the big one. It's important. Mm-hmm. Selkirk, send me a small. I'll buy it.
Yep.
And what is, Adam, just so we're clear, and like this is one thing that I don't quite, I wish this was talked about more like on the broadcast and stuff. Like, Just the progression throughout the season, right? We've had a couple events now. We have a mid-season event next and at Beer City with Andrew Coop hosting. What do all these standings mean? Like, what are these teams playing for? Like the hard eights, like you're in eighth right now. What are you playing for? Like what's obviously the goal is to win Challenger, but what's the goal? Like, is there an end of the season tournament? Like, I don't know any of this because it's not really like the progression of the season is not really being talked about that much.
Right. So first off, I'll talk about each match real fast. 3 points for a regulation win.
Yep.
2 points for a Dream Breaker win. 1 point for a Dream Breaker loss, and 0 points if you lose in regulation. There are 20, each team will play 23 regular season matches. And then the total overall amount of points will set up for an end of season tournament. So, and there, and there's two dates for that tournament. So you're going to have the initial rounds of the teams that make it through for one tournament. And then there'll be a final tournament. And I actually do not know the amount of teams. I'm not sure if it's like the final four or something like that, or possibly the final two. I do not know, but I know the 23, I know it's 23 regular season matchups, and I know the point system, and I know that there is two postseason events after the regular season concludes.
Why two again at the end?
I have no idea. It's just, I think it's just to kind of trim out some of those teams that make it through, have a couple rounds at that event, and then have the
finals,
the whole shebang finals for at a different time, a couple weeks later.
So call it the play. You have the playoffs that first postseason, and then you have the finals after that. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. But it would be good, like, if they talked about, like, okay, these teams are fighting for to be in that top four, so they make the playoffs or whatever it may be, top six, and then maybe two teams get a bye. I don't know.
But, yeah, I think maybe as we get more information, and as the teams kind of even out and how many matches that they've played at the events, it'll be easier to talk about that. But I agree, it's not. I mean, I like the adjustments. They've done a really nice job with feedback. I think MLP has. I mean, they already switched the have to win on serve after one event. So it's just happened not quickly because we had that break, but a lot of it is new, and they're kind of sifting through to find the right format. So I will have to say it is a bit confusing at times and tough to follow when some of the formats have changed and some of the rules have changed. And I think that's just part of the deal. Until time will heal. Once we get more comfortable with it, more events and less changes with the format and things of that nature, then I think it'll be easier to follow, and everyone will be more on the same page. And I just don't think it's perfect right now.
No, but I don't think it's terribly hard to follow. I think once you kind of get into it, you do have continuity now, right? Which is a big deal. It's not like we're having this DC event and now like the teams are switching again. It's like, okay, we have the same teams from Atlanta to now. You know, some teams play, some teams don't. But you have the continuity of the teams. You can look at the overall standings, kind of see like what they need to do to keep earning points. And it's like, I like that aspect. I just want to know like what everybody's playing for, right? Like what is really important, I feel, and getting an audience is these matches have to mean something, and they do, but we just don't know what, like, we don't know what they like, what they're fighting for. And I think that's a big piece of like getting people drawn in, you know, like we talked about before we got on, Adam, like with the golf yesterday at the US Open at Pinehurst number two. Rory hasn't won a major in 10 years, right? And he came out so hot when he was younger. And it's been a long road trying to get back to the top. And you said it, like he had made like something 496 of 496 within 2 feet or something.
Yeah.
And he misses it just because it's so much pressure. It's like, but the tension in watching that, because we knew what it meant and we knew how important it was, it made me almost want to throw up. I'm not kidding. After he missed, I was like, oh my God. But like, we have to figure out how to develop that in pickleball in terms of matches that mean something. Obviously it takes time. Golf has the history. They've been, you know, it's different, but we do have to find a way to make this stuff mean something. And it used to be with like money, right? It's like, oh, they're playing for like the biggest prize money ever. But now it's also like they have salaries. So it's mm-hmm. hard to determine, like, they're not fighting for their livelihood like they once were. It's just a little different, but we do have to find ways to make it important.
Time. Definitely need some time. Yeah. I agree with you, Rob. Definitely need some time. And that goes against my clutch gene is garbage with the whole Rory thing. 496 for 496 inside 3 feet. Gets in a big moment and flubs it. Yeah, that hurts. And
think if he made that putt and then the other putt he missed with like that was 3 or 4 feet, he wins the tournament.
It's deep in his head.
Oh, yeah,
deep in his head at this point. I thought for sure we were gonna have a playoff. I kind of go do something for a couple holes and come back and found out the situation that Rory unclutch, and that's just too bad.
Yeah, but man, that was such. I watched the whole back nine. That might be one of the best back nines of a major that I've seen in a long time. And Dude, it's wild how Bryson has completely changed his image. Like, he used to be known as just like the most annoying douche in golf, and now he's like the most loved. It's crazy the 180 he's done with his image.
Hey Rob, I have a little connection to Pinehurst with mm-hmm. Corinne's parents living there. I know they don't do, I think they do this every like 6 or 7 years or something like that. Next time it's in Pinehurst, I think we need to go. What do you say? What do you say about that?
I'm in. So mark it down now. Lock it in.
Lock it in. And that's a pretty long time away, but I feel like it needs to happen. Man. I think I need to experience the US Open in Pinehurst, and
God,
when I have
so
a connection there, it must.
Done. That would be a blast. And one cool thing about so we talked a little bit about after the round, one of the golf commentators was out trying to recreate the bunker shot that he hit on 18 from like 55 feet, and he got it within like a few feet, like just a silly shot. And the commentator is trying to like recreate that after the round when it was like dark outside. And then sure enough, like during the middle of the broadcast, Bryson's still there. He comes over and like coaches the commentator through hitting it, and he gets it within like 2 feet. And then he hands him the trophy. It was such a cool moment. But so Bryson has in the trophy, in the cup, Bryson has sand from that 18th bunker in the cup. Ooh. And he's taking that home with him. And he's always going to have that sand at home in the trophy, which I thought was really cool.
How are you going to drink out of it, though?
Oh, you're not. You're just going to drink. You're going to drink out of one of the other majors he's won.
Okay, fair enough. So Bryson used to be an asshole. I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, no. Like he was very unliked. Yeah.
Okay.
Disliked.
I mean, yeah. Better. That's a good correction there.
I had to correct that. Yeah. Unliked.
Okay. Disliked. Okay. No. God, I'll tell you what though. Those. I don't care what anyone says. I'm not a golfer, but individual sports are difficult, man. It is tough. I got a lot of respect for those guys and gals on the links. Just you, the club, and the ball. No one to help you. No one to talk you through the bad times. Those guys are super mentally tough out there, and I will always have respect for individual sports, even if I don't fully understand that specific sport.
It's good shout out to your lovely wife, Corinne Carr, like battling golf. Then she battled some singles and pickleball. Another lovely shout out to our mutual buddy Mark Silvers.
Oh yes, Mark Silvers down in Savannah, Georgia at the Savannah Golf Club. Guy played a little pro golf. Got to give it to him. He actually won the Big Break. I don't know if you remember that show. They had
reality
golf show. Yeah, yeah, won the big break. So that's a quality shout out. I'll have to text him after this and let him know we brought him up.
I saw he liked one of my tweets. That's what made me think of him. But yeah,
there you go. But it's Savannah Golf Club. It's good times down in Savannah. I will have to say some aggressive eating and drinking. It's you got to recover once you leave that place, but it's a good time when you're there.
Man, I always say, and now they have like I feel like that's like my favorite place to go play pickleball, because now they have that little like bar right there outside the mm-hmm. and it's just like so like it's what pickleball should be. You have golf going on, you have a little bar right in the mix, you have people playing pickleball. It's the epitome of what pickleball should be. This is a commercial for Savannah Golf Club, but go check it out if you're in Savannah. Hit up Mark Silvers, hit up Jalen, boom.
And have a Tropicalia IPA while you're there. That is my recommendation.
Tropicalia,
okay, Robert, I marked this down right here when we were talking about everyone or a lot of people feeling bad for Andrea Coop. Do you think that Leah Jansen was one of those people? No?
I would say no.
Okay, moving on. Okay, tip of the day, Rob. So I want to talk a little bit about attacking different player types and where to attack. Okay. I think it is important to note, especially ex tennis players with those great strokes out on the side of their body. I think a lot of players just continue to go to space. They try to burn them up the middle, they try to burn them up the line, and they do not attack the body. And I think it is so important against ex-tennis players to attack the body and look for those combination shots to possibly finish in two or three instead of trying to continually beat them in space. And on vice versa, when you're playing someone without that extensive racket sport background, they're more of just a pickleball player, often those players cover their body pretty well, because that's where a lot of those shots go playing pickleball. And they do not cover space well. And I think I see a lot of players just kind of beating their head against a wall, trying to beat a tennis player into space and trying to beat that pickleball player into their body. And you have to know the difference between those opponents and how to attack them properly.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And I was like, through that whole thing, I was just thinking about like what I do when I'm on court and how I approach it. I don't think there's many times where I go to space in general. I think I go heavy body. The only place I go to space is when I'm on the right side and I have kind of a dink out to my forehand. I'll go line there, because I feel like if you're going to space, it's typically to a player's backhand, you know, if they're a righty. And it's really hard to get hurt from that side. So that's just thinking about it. You know, that's really one of the only places that I'll go to space. Even if I'm on the backhand, lines going usually into somebody's forehand. Mm-hmm. So that's tough on the backhand side. And if you go middle, usually the left side player can cover that pretty well if the right side's playing line. So. Yeah, I don't go to space much, man. I try to tangle people up. And I think the other thing to think about is, and I don't see a lot of it out there right now, is like more of like disguise off-speed speed-ups. It's more pace, which can be effective, especially with the paddles now. But I think there's still a lot of room for people to develop more off-speed type speed-ups, where it's like you're disguising dinks and it's more placement over power, because I don't go power on speed ups either, pretty much ever.
No, those are great points. I mean, I like that. Attack the body more. I just see they're just trying to beat them players, you know, 3-5 to 4-5, even 4-5 plus, trying to beat players up the middle or up the line. And they just forget about that body. Yeah. And also one other thing, because this is a pretty common player type, is the player that has that counterattack and that punch from their body, but they sit very heavy backhand as a right-hander. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I also see a lot of players kind of forcing the ball to the right shoulder and the right hip. And that plays right into that player's strength, as they like to counter those attacks at their body. And they also slide a little bit to make sure that they can handle that ball with the backhand. And a lot of times these players almost disregard their forehand side. It's all backhand only.
Yeah.
So when I'm playing a player and I know that they are so backhand heavy, now sure, if the ball's high enough, I'm going to try to get it to the right side of their body. Yeah. But if I am attacking that player off of a kind of a neutral ball that's not obviously high, I actually like to attack space to their backhand side, because they're not very good when they get extended. 100%. They're amazing, amazing right here, not very good when they get extended. So these are just a couple very common player types that I think you can use some of these tips to exploit in your rec games or your tournament play.
100%. And I think another thing on the, like, if you're on the backhand side and you're, like, you see most, there's not many people out there, even like, honestly, even in the pro game, that can attack line from the backhand side effectively. Most everybody goes body or middle. And like, if I'm sitting right side, I'm pretty much always sitting backhand, like you're talking about, Adam.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm sliding if I need to, but where I can get caught is right here, my right shoulder, like up here, right? Like, because everywhere else I can cover, but here's a really tough spot. But there's just not many people that can get it there. So if I'm playing somebody that I know can get it there, I will, I'll cheat forehand a little bit, and I'll be blocking on my right side or on my backhand. But there's just not many people that can do it. So I would say, and it's not easy, right? It's not easy to attack over the high part of the net down the line right there. But it's a good spot to go, especially if you're going 2E off the bounce or something like that. You see a lot of people just go in middle. Line's good there.
It is. I agree completely. And anytime I see a player who is playing the left side hit a quality two-handed speed up off of the bounce up the line, I'm impressed every single time. Because it is a very difficult shot. And just two people that kind of popped into my head. One was Eva Radzikowska, who is amazing at it. And another one is Xiaomei. Xiaomei has a very good two-hander to all the spots up the line when he is playing the left. And it's so important, as you said, Rob, as those right side players who are in front of you and who you were attacking are so used to those shots not going there. So if you were able to pull that off, that's 100%. A lot of responsibility for your opponent right in front of you.
Yeah. And I just the last thought on this, Adam, I think these have been good tips, is the reason you're able to go two-y off the bounce on the backhand side is because you're getting like a dead dink. So when we're talking about amateurs out playing, like they're focused on consistency, making dinks, but you don't want it to be a dead dink, a neutral dink that sits up a little bit. So you need to continue working on dinks that are one, staying lower, and two, just more aggressive to where you can't pull a, like if something's sitting up, I'm going to flick it. Everybody's going to go two-y attack. Like you just can't have dinks sit up anymore. So if you're dinking, look to be more aggressive, whether it's on whether you're slicing it or whether you're rolling it, but you can't just hit dinks over anymore and expect to win by being consistent on just dead dinks.
Yeah. And you clearly can't hit them high to where your opponent can take them out of the air. But if you're pushing that dink a little bit deeper and your opponent has to take it out of the air, but it's below mid thigh, who really cares, you know, in that situation. So I think that's a good point also. And some nice kind of general tips for different player types that, I run across these player types at the pro level, and I know that in some of my teachings of the mid-level players, it's something that happens all the time, and I see these player types over and over and over again. So know your opponent, make those adjustments, pick some different spots, and know what's happening in front of you, and make those adjustments accordingly.
Yeah, and if you're hitting, if you're playing somebody that has a two-y dink, you don't want to hit it shallow and soft. You want to just push them, like hit a more aggressive dink at their ankles, where it's going to be really tough to hit that two-y dink. Like if you're playing James Ignatowicz, you don't want to hit soft into the kitchen, right? You want to like try to hit a more aggressive heavy dink at his ankles, so it's tough to take that two-y.
And a lot of pro players can go back and forth between two-y and one-handed, but the mid levels, sometimes it's two-y exclusively. So push that dink further into the person who can't take that second hand off and get the extra reach. And if they take that out of the air, as long as it's not high, I think you're safe.
100%.
Did we get any questions?
Oh yeah, we got a couple. This is
okay. Let's see.
We'd love to hear you guys' thoughts on the tips that we've talked about on MLP that we've talked about today. Put them down in the comments. I haven't been great about getting in the comments lately, but I will get in the comments on this one and we can talk about it. And okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. We got, so I was in the Discord and I saw, somebody was talking about our podcast saying it was boring now. So, you know, it's fun to read that stuff. It's a guy that probably, you know, his name's Travis. I called him Travy because he got really upset when I would call pickleball picky. And I got that from Greg Dow, but I would be like, oh, yeah, a little picky. And he was like, and he put like throw up face as an emoji. And I was like, I'm going to just call it picky exclusively from now on. we restarted the stream and I lost the questions. I got them back. Here we go. Okay. So,
all right, good.
How does one break into working in pickleball? Not as a pro, but as an employee of APP, PPA, MLP, or the various media companies that produce pickleball?
God.
I got an answer for that. I think.
Please.
Well, there's a blueprint out there, right? Like we've seen people do it. We've seen NML start a blog, and then I think they got picked up as GMs of a team. We saw Josh Gartman tweet a lot about pickleball and do some stats and do some takes, and then he got picked up by a team. Jimmy Miller, who nobody really knew, like started a podcast and started talking about pickleball, and he got into the mix. So in my opinion, the way to do it is by creating content and putting your thoughts out there and getting in the mix, and either that or doing something that nobody else is doing, like going to well, not that nobody's doing stats, but like the more content you can create about what you're seeing and adding value to the marketplace will make you valuable to people that think you that think you know what you're talking about. But if you know, that's the thing, is like you're like it's pretty wild that somebody can tweet right now and get picked up as a GM because they tweeted some stats, but that's what's happening, you know.
Yeah.
So,
I think that maybe that window will close at some point, but yeah. I think it's pretty open for probably another couple years, I would say. So free content, kind of mix it up, throw something out there, get noticed, and that's probably your best way to wiggle in there.
Agreed. Okay, next one. When someone is opening a facility, we've seen a lot of facilities, Adam, so we probably have some decent insight. Mm-hmm. What are the most important factors that we should consider, and what is a good pricing structure?
God, these are hard ones.
I think you need space. Like space on each course is very important, and in my opinion, you need them all individually fenced. That's a must. We can't have courts that are open anymore where balls can go to each court at new facilities.
I'm with that, and yeah, kind of. Yeah, court setup and kind of lighting and backdrop and visibility is very important. On one of the only downsides, I think, to indoor play is sometimes it is tough to see in certain facilities, not all. So I think all of that is very important from a playability standpoint. And in terms of the pricing structure, I mean, I know that some are – they kind of have drop-in fees, but mostly I think it's a membership situation, whether that's monthly or yearly. I think the longer you do your membership, you get a little price break. But kind of having that membership status, and then you can come and play as you please, reserve courts and that thing. Do you know of a different structure or a different way someone set it up?
I'm sure people have set it up where you pay to play, but I think...
Just straight hourly.
Yeah, but I think membership's the way to do it, just so you have like predictable recurring revenue each month, and you know what's coming in, and then you can make money other ways. You can make money through leagues, through running tournaments, through food and beverage if you want. There's plenty of other ways to monetize, but I think that's pretty much it. I would also say when opening a facility, it should be indoors. All right. This is another kind of like a tip, educational. What's an underutilized shot to take advantage of right now?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with it. And you touched on it. Mid-paced.
Yeah.
Mid-paced. I just see so many players. It's dink or fire aggressively. And have a mid-paced. That could be an aggressive dink with roll with topspin, or that could be a full-on attack that is just not hit at 100%. So I think mixing up paces is the most important for me. And the rare time I get on court these days, I like to tinker with that, and I can definitely still give some players trouble when I mix up my paces and my locations.
One thing I saw over the weekend, and it was brief, but for whatever reason, I was watching the Brooklyn Aces, and Martin Emrich switched from, for whatever reason, maybe it was a lob or something, but he had to go from the right side to the left side. So he was a lefty playing on the left, and it was game point, mm-hmm. I believe. And so Martin has a really nice like backhand dink when he's on the right side. You know, he kind of knifes it. He moves really well. He's got a big forehand in the middle, but when he's taking balls out of the air on that backhand side from the right side, he doesn't have much of, it's like kind of a poke attack. So he's not able to get under and really roll it and attack it. So that gets him in trouble sometimes. But when he switched over to the left side, he was in a dink. I think he hit a dink forehand cross court. And then he took a forehand that was out wide and flicked it right into the guy that was right in front of him to win the point. And one thing that I just like seeing, forehands on the outside sometimes. Even if it's a lefty on the left, I think that hasn't been used enough. And I've seen that also, like I played with Ryler some, and he was on the left because we didn't switch because my knee wasn't full on. So he stayed on the left, and dude, his forehand cross court, much more comfortable. And we've seen it, dude. It's actually crazy. It blows my mind to see all these lefties on the right side that can't hit backhand dinks. consistently well. It's nuts, right? There's a lot of them. I don't know why, because most people on the most righties love the backhand dink, don't like the forehand dink. So there's a lot of lefties out there that can't hit backhand dinks very well. And I don't get it.
No, no, that's fair. I literally cannot speed up with my backhand when I'm on the left side.
Yep.
But literally every time I get an even okay ball when I'm on the right side with my forehand, I speed it up to a variety of places. So maybe this is just next level right here, Robert. The next progression is to possibly get a lefty on the left, because those right side players in front of them are only used to seeing backhand speed ups from the out wide. Now they're going to be seeing forehand speed ups, different spin, more ability to create power, more reach into the kitchen, a variety of different things. So maybe you're onto something here, and we could possibly see this in a pro match at some point. Apparently saw it this past weekend.
I got so I'm playing the rest of the APPs this year with Jack Monroe. And I've seen him on the left side a little bit too. So he, because he played with Mario Barrientos, and they had some points where Mario stayed on the right, where he's more comfortable, and Jack was on the left. And I think there's something to it. There's a lot to be explored in this game that's unsolved, and that's the fun part about it.
A lot to be explored.
A lot to be explored.
Anything else, Rob? I'm out of notes.
That's all I got, man. I think I would love to hear everybody's thoughts on all of the strategy, all the tips we gave today, what you're going to work on, and what else do you guys want to hear from us as well? Because old Travi says we're boring because we don't gossip, Adam. We just talk picky.
Yes, picky. That's right. Staying power is hard.
It is.
It's easy to be a flash in the pan on the court and off the court. You got to have that staying power.
I will say what we've done this year, Adam, is nothing short of remarkable in terms of our consistency.
especially given our personalities,
we couldn't have done this without Josh, our producer.
Sorry, producer Josh. Yep. Thank you for everything.
Josh has been the most flexible. When we're like need an hour, okay, maybe we do it to at 6 a.m. he's been the man. So appreciate you, Josh.
I mean, it's reasonable to give your crew a heads up 48 hours before that you have to have a schedule change. But normally I tend to do it at about 6:30 a.m. the day of. So for an 8:30 podcast. So we appreciate your flexibility and quality episode, Rob. Yeah. That's all I got.
And for you guys that I was kind of bummed because they don't see the episodes. Like there was a big gap for people that listen on audio. But just so you guys know, we've recorded every week this year, basically. It's all been going to YouTube, but from here on out, we're now on the audio platform. So Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that. So every week we record Monday morning, we publish Wednesday, and you can count on that through the rest of the year because consistency wins everything.
Ooh, hot take.
Goodbye.